You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 93, All Liquid Metal, All the Time. Today on the podcast, we have a lot to talk about with iPhone 8, especially with the material used on the back of the phone, which purportedly will not be glass, will not be aluminum, but most certainly will be liquid metal, a material that we've talked about on past episodes of this podcast before, a very important material, and one that has very large benefits for smartphones. We'll get into that discussion, but before that, we wanted to talk about Amazon purchasing Whole Foods, what that means for Amazon and its future. So that's coming up next on The Impromptu.
So, this week, actually, no, it wasn't this week. It was like last week. Amazon is buying Whole Foods for multiple Instagrams worth of money. For that is now our metric of company purchases. So this is huge news. Whole Foods wasn't doing so well financially. They rapidly expanded their stores and it was kind of too much and they were starting to lose money. Like, things weren't dire or catastrophic yet, but they were definitely hemorrhaging money because they had tried to open way too many stores across North America.
Right. And they banked on that asparagus water thing taking off, and they have about 50 million in their warehouse right now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 50 million jars of asparagus water.
Exactly. I guess one morning, Jeff Bezos, in usual Jeff Bezos fashion, said, "I must eat the breakfast octopus." And he decided to buy them. For those who have never heard the breakfast octopus story, it's a fun anecdote. Bezos, I forget who he was talking to, but he was telling this story about how he saw on the menu octopus for breakfast, and he was just stunned because it was something he'd never seen before. And like, the moral of the whole thing was, I must try the breakfast octopus. In other words, I owe it to myself to sample new experiences and acquire things that are doing things differently. Like, where Amazon has no core competency, acquire a company that has that core competency. So applying that to this purchase, Amazon has a very intricate distribution system for goods that are not groceries. So they can next day deliver you a USB drive or a hoverboard or a fidget spinner or whatever. And that all works seamlessly. But as they've found out, groceries are a whole different animal. Because you're not just talking about stocking things in a warehouse for when someone might order them. We're talking about perishable goods that will rot or spoil or go bad or stale that have to be replenished. And you can't just leave things sitting in a warehouse waiting for someone to order them. So they have a service in several cities in the US called Amazon Fresh, and that does grocery delivery, but it's on a much smaller scale because groceries are not their core competency. So breakfast octopus, they buy Whole Foods, and instantly they have a massive distribution network for organic, high quality goods that hit a very high-end demographic, so lots of revenue. Because asparagus water costs $12 of a glass.
Well, so now with Amazon's power, they can lower that to $1 a jar, right? And everybody will buy it.
Yeah.
But when I heard this announcement, I asked myself, why a big grocery chain? And then I asked myself again, well, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Amazon, the way they've been going, because they first started with books, right?
Yeah.
They've expanded into almost everything but groceries. I mean, why not? I mean, they clearly want to change the world as far as how we buy things and where we buy things from. And it makes sense that they want to, why not just take over every market? Why not just completely disrupt retail the way it is right now?
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe that is the future. I mean, not in the next 5 years, but I mean, what's going to happen 20 years from now? Do we need retail stores?
Yeah.
I mean, we can guarantee stuff. Eventually stuff will evolve to where the drone just drops the item off at your door and you have same day delivery. I mean, I think that's what stops people like you and I sometimes from buying stuff off of Amazon, because even though they have next day or 2 day delivery, sometimes you just want to be able to walk stuff in. Like the other week at Best Buy, you went in there to buy a game. You just wanted to get it right away. So eventually they'll solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's essentially their end game. And part of that may be some retail stores. Like they have that pilot project in Seattle near their HQ, where they have a grocery store where you just walk in and take things off the shelf and leave, and it knows what you've taken with you and it charges you automatically. At no point do you have to go to a cashier or a till or anything. You're just putting things you want in your basket and walking out with them, and that's it. Now, this relies on an incredible amount of computer vision and AI technology that is not quite working the way it would need to for a large-scale rollout. For example, the computer vision AI software can only support up to 20 people in the store at a time. And there's a key piece of functionality where every item you remove from a shelf is added to your virtual cart. And if you put that item back, it is removed from your virtual cart. But if you put it back somewhere that the system isn't expecting, as in you grab a loaf of bread from the bakery section and leave it somewhere in the middle of the soup aisle, it doesn't know what to do with that. So the bread that you just left somewhere will still remain in your virtual cart because the system can't adapt to it currently. And that's a big problem if you want to roll it out to grocery stores proper, because people do that shit all the time. They literally have people whose job it is to go down every aisle with some regularity and move things that have been misplaced back to where they're supposed to be. So,
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, why waste human resources on such a menial task like that, right? Nobody enjoys doing that job in retail, having to move stuff back.
No, of course not.
One of the reasons why, just because I've worked retail, I always try to put stuff back where I found it. Because why? I mean, just don't be a jerk too, right?
Yeah, it's terrible. But the thing is, any system that creates this automation has to be able to compensate for that. And currently, Amazon's system can't. So I think once they own Whole Foods, I think this will kind of be part of what they start to do with it. So Whole Foods day-to-day will probably stay the same. Amazon will co-opt their grocery infrastructure and use it, deploy it as a service, essentially.
So this is what, a test bed for them, you think?
I think so.
I mean, this is just like a toy for them to turn it into something serious eventually.
I don't think it's quite a toy. Like, I think the distribution pipeline is the big thing, because then they can expand Amazon Fresh across North America, because Essentially, any Whole Foods becomes an Amazon Fresh distribution hub. So groceries that are stored at all the various Whole Foods and the system that supports them would allow Amazon to provide fresh organic groceries to your door in any city that has a Whole Foods. So they could expand their system instantly once the deal goes through and they make some tweaks. So that's huge. And then, of course, they have the retail stores. So that can be a test bed. They can deploy their computer vision technology. They can work on refining it in a real-world environment with real customers. They'll probably start it with one or two stores, and then as it improves, they'll roll it out to more until finally every Whole Foods in North America has the tech, and you just walk in with your phone with the Amazon Fresh app and take stuff, and then it charges you when you leave. So
this automation thing, like, do you have a sense of like how far realistically are we away from them getting that stuff right? Like, are we talking a couple of years? Are we talking 5 years out?
I mean, GPU power for machine learning is increasing. The frameworks that are being deployed to create machine learning is constantly improving. So, I mean, as processing power and software capability increase, as we get more refined computer vision sensors, maybe deploy RFID, other elements. I don't know. Probably.
I mean, I guess we can kind of extrapolate based on all that stuff you just said too. So, I mean, maybe stuff is changing so rapidly now. I don't think it's unrealistic to say within 5 years.
I would say within three. I mean, the hardware is progressing at a geometric rate. We're getting faster and faster GPUs all the time. Google and NVIDIA are massively innovating in this space. We're getting like double the power machine learning GPUs every 5 seconds. Yeah, like that is just progressing super fast. And then machine learning researchers are constantly working to improve how AI learns and trains and all of that stuff. So, I mean, look at how far we've come in like 1 or 2 years. And then right now, that translates to a tiny store with 20 people. And it can do all of the magic things. So then, 2 or 3 years down the line, once that processing power has tripled or quadrupled, and once the software has gotten however many times better, that translates to probably a full-scale grocery store with restock detection, with all of the bells and whistles that would be needed. So, I mean, yeah, I'd say 2 or 3 years tops. Maybe 4 if things don't go as they plan, but probably 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how soon because I'm kind of excited about this, but I'm interested to see how soon this stuff gets rolled out to other countries, because the Amazon Fresh stuff that you said, is right now it's so limited, even within the United States. It's so limited to select cities. So when do they do a big rollout of this to all of the United States and including Canada? Because we don't have anything like this.
So, I mean, as I said, the Whole Foods distribution network would allow them to provide Amazon Fresh across North America.
We do have Whole Foods locations here, don't we?
Yes, we do. There's one on Cambie, near City Hall in Vancouver. There's one somewhere. I think there's one in near White Rock. There's a few. There's one in Park Royal. So, yeah. Once those all fall under Amazon's control, they have their network and they can deploy Amazon Fresh everywhere. Obviously, Whole Foods has no presence outside of North America, so it would just be North America to start with. Probably the U.S. to start with, because Amazon is so good at that. here's this awesome new thing. You can only get it in the States. Cool. When do we get it in Canada? At some point, maybe. 5 years later. Yeah, we're finally rolling it out, guys. Okay, cool.
It's like that for a lot of things where I think we're used to it by now.
Yeah,
I
mean,
we still don't have Apple News available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that launched, what, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah. For some reason, I have it on my watch with watchOS 4, though. Like, I actually get, like, notifications with news.
There is a widget, but the actual app itself, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know.
The app isn't available on the phone.
Well,
just the widget itself.
It's weird because people have seen the app flash in and out in Canada. So they might be getting ready to launch it here. I'm not sure. I mean, it's got to happen at some point. I mean, every country does have major news sources. Like, we have Globe and Mail, Global News, CTV. So, I mean, you just compile those and there you go.
Okay, so are we done with the Amazon Whole Foods thing?
But, just to wrap up, the deal, if it's approved, will go through at the end of the year. We'll probably start to see the first changes early next year, probably sometime in the spring. Should be interesting if it actually gets approved, then Whole Foods becomes part of that big Amazon supply chain. Alexa, buy me cucumber water and asparagus water and everything else.
You want to do the iPhone, that new iPhone image?
There are some new images that are believed to be of a dummy model of the iPhone 8. Basically, it's consistent with all the previous leaks. All screen on the front, the little dip at the top for the cameras. Just kind of a general refinement. We're basically getting really close to essentially seeing what it's actually going to look like when you're holding it in your hand. And the most interesting thing is the back of the phone. So this is the first time we've actually seen what the back of the phone is supposed to look like in semi-finished production quality. And it's very clear that the back of the phone is indeed a plate made of some kind of glass-like material. And the camera bump, previously it looked like it was kind of sitting on top of that plate, but in this dummy unit, it seems to be molded to the plate, which tells us some very interesting things. So to get to that, we'll start with where iPhone design has gone. I guess we can cover all of it. Really, I can just start with the 4S. So the iPhone 4 4S design was a steel ring chassis, and then the front and the back were a sandwich of glass. And it was pretty, but it had some very key structural flaws. As in, if you dropped it, the entire back of the phone could shatter. Not so great. So we saw that design evolve with the 5 and 5S, where the glass was reduced to thin strips at the top and bottom of the phone on the back, and the metal started to take over more of the chassis. Then, obviously, with the 6 and 6S, we saw the phone go completely metal unibody with a very small antenna line.
The 6 was a bit of an anomaly in the metal design in that it was a bit weak. Well, quite a bit weak, actually.
Yes.
To me, the 6S is kind of like where they got it right.
Yeah, they miscalculated the strength of the aluminum they were using in the 6. They improved that with the 6S. They added the Series 7000 aluminum that was used in the Apple Watch. And bend gate went away. Then, with the 7, we saw a further refinement. The camera bump was molded into the metal chassis. The antenna line was minimalized to the point where it almost disappears, particularly on the jet black model. So moving forward, we see that for some reason they have gone back to a plate on the back of the phone. And that plate seems to have a molded camera bump. So that tells us a few things. So first of all, the reason Apple used glass on the back in the first place was for radio transparency. They needed the antenna signal to be able to go through something. So they were using glass on the back of the phone as a shortcut because glass is radio transparent. So it makes it easy for the signal to get out of the phone. Because once you move to a unibody aluminum enclosure, you have to do some very complicated antenna design to make sure that you're still going to get a quality signal out of the phone. So moving forward through the iterations, we saw they were able to reduce the glass to strips, and then they were able to get rid of it entirely, replacing it with an advanced antenna design that only required a few lines on the back of the phone. And then that refined even further. And now it's like just a single line at the top and the bottom that you can barely see because it curves around the edge of the phone. So evolving through that, we see a clear progression. Like Apple used glass because it was easy and because doing something else required immense engineering effort. But the problem with glass is it's fragile. If you put it all over the back of the phone and you drop your phone, it's going to shatter. It doesn't matter if it's Gorilla Glass 2 or Gorilla Glass 5. If you drop it from arm height onto a concrete floor, it's going to shatter regardless, no matter how impact resistant they make it. So with that in mind, and the fact that Apple stores have quotas for repairs, they want to bring that number down. And so far, every design change they've made has been in the name of bringing the repair number down. We've talked about on the show the home button. The reason it's become virtual, become a force touch button, is because one of the primary failure points on previous iPhone designs was the home button.
Well, it could be said about click it enough times, any moving parts.
Well, any moving part, exactly. You click it enough times, it's going to break down. So they improved that over time, and now finally it's not a button. And with the 8, there's no button. It's all software.
I've heard that Apple has had a hard time training people in other countries, like Asia and stuff like that, as a whole, just because we talked about this before we turned the mics on, that for years, people over there have been using the accessibility feature where you have the on-screen touch button in software, because they don't want to use the touch button because they know that part can fail if it's used for too long. Yeah. For too many times. So even though, obviously, like you said, I mean, they've improved it, even on the 6S. I mean, every version the touch button got, I think, a little bit stronger and more resilient. I mean, I don't think the touch button has been crap in quite a few years. Like, I'm thinking like 4S days.
Yeah.
Like, it was way, because I've had that button have issues.
Oh, yeah.
On much older phones. But on the 5S, 6, 6S, I never had a problem with that.
Yeah, it got consistently better over time. But of course, got to bring those failure rates down. So now there's basically no more button, and there's soon to be no button at all. So, I mean, if we look at iPhone design as a continuum, we see that the evolution of the design trends towards making it simpler, making it cleaner, introducing advanced engineering techniques, reducing failure rates. So when I see the back of the iPhone 8 as a panel of some material, it's definitely not glass, because going back to glass means going back to the back of your phone shattering. It means ditching all of the engineering work that was done because, hey, the whole back of the phone is glass. You don't need to have fancy antennas if the whole back of the phone is radio transparent, right? So whatever the back of the phone is, it has to be A, incredibly strong, B, radio transparent because there are no antenna lines on this design, and C, if this dummy unit is accurate and the camera bump is indeed molded into the plate, it has to be malleable enough to create intricate shapes, say through injection molding. So there's only one material I know of that fits all three of those criteria, and that is the mythical, magical, amazing material that I have talked about for 2 or 3 years now, liquid metal. Liquid metal can be injection molded into any shape. It can be given a finish that appears to look like glass. It is incredibly strong, self-repairing, bouncy, and radio transparent.
Can you clarify what you mean by self-repairing?
So liquid metal has an amorphous atomic structure, meaning if it is dropped, any dent in it will actually bounce back to the original shape. Now, it can only do that so many times before the overall integrity of the material is compromised. But for like, I don't know, up to 10 or 20 drops, maybe more, probably more. I mean,
really shouldn't be dropping your phone 10 or 20 times.
No, probably not. But the nice thing is this material will bounce back. Like even if it were to fall onto like a corner or something and it really gets dented, however bad that dent is initially, the liquid metal will revert back to its original shape. Maybe not 100% perfectly, but it will be almost unnoticeable like an hour after you drop it or something. Like I'm not sure how fast it repairs, but yeah, like short of really like slamming it onto the ground, it's going to be almost unbreakable. So, now, obviously the whole phone doesn't seem to be made of it, just the back. But that makes sense because we've talked about this before. Liquid metal is expensive to produce, and Apple doesn't have a pipeline for manufacturing it. They have a number of patents. They have machines that can injection mold the material, but they've never done it at scale before. The only time they've ever used it was to make SIM ejector tools for the iPhone 3GS.
My question is, with this design, with this liquid metal plate at the back, are we still going, is that going to affect the design, the seamless, there's some alliteration for you, design of like where the edge of the glass display meets the chassis? Like, it's just, having a hard time envisioning this. And it was hard to tell in that jet black iPhone phone, because everything looks kind of like one piece.
Right. So it's going to be kind of like the front where you see it curves to meet the chassis. So, I mean, liquid metal injection molded, you can make any shape you want. So they're just going to be able to make a piece that has the camera bump and then curves to meet the chassis.
Now, do you know how those two things get put together in the process of manufacturing? They're fused together somehow.
Lots of glue.
I'm sure it'll look good.
And because they've made the phone waterproof, so lots of glue and rubber gaskets. So, I mean, there will be the main chassis piece made of either aluminum or stainless steel, depending on who you ask. And on that will sit the battery, the logic board, no more button, so maybe additional sensors, like the new Touch ID, although that'll probably be part of the screen. So then the screen will just be glued and, well, they'll put a rubber gasket around for waterproofing and then they'll like glue it all in. So then the display assembly will contain the cameras, the Touch ID substrate, force touch sensors, all of that magic stuff. Mm-hmm. So that'll sit there. That'll go onto the top of the chassis, and then they'll just gasket and glue the liquid metal onto the other side of the chassis.
You know, I think it's funny that even though, like, we know pretty much that the Touch ID sensor will be on the front, as you should expect it on the iPhone, but I was reading that post on Mac Rumors, and somebody actually commented saying, my gut feeling is telling me the Touch ID is going to be on the back of the iPhone 8. Like, no.
Do you know how many people Johnny Ive would murder if they had to make that compromise? It's not happening. That's the backup design if their engineers failed horribly. They have never used the backup design ever. Ever. For example, there was a design for the 7 Plus that made the rounds there was no dual lens camera. That was the backup if they couldn't make the dual lens work.
So it's like a spy's cyanide capsule as an escape.
Yeah, kind of.
You don't really ever want to use that.
Yeah, it's the easy phone design. There's always two designs every year. There's the, this is the ultimate expression of what we want to achieve design, and the, oh fuck, something went wrong, quick, make an iPhone that's sort of slightly better than the current one design. They have never used that design. And hopefully they never will have to, because their engineering team always knocks it out of the park every time. They conquer every yield issue. They somehow manage to just build 60 million of the damn things without any major problems. I mean, okay, we can put a giant asterisk next to that because of the antenna problems with the 4 and whatever else, but for the most part, considering the innovations that they add year over year, considering the technical challenges involved, like, especially this year, because we're talking just insane amounts of tech going into this phone, moving Touch ID into a layer in the screen, adding OLED for the first time, and not just OLED, but
right.
A custom shape OLED panel with the cutout at the top.
I think that this is going to be probably their most technically complex phone to manufacture.
Yeah. And it's going to have a price tag to match.
Well, I was going to say the bill of parts and everything, probably the most expensive iPhone.
It's going to be up there. I think it'll be plus pricing, maybe a little bit more. And it'll start at 64 gigs, probably. To make things simple, it'll probably just be jet black because it looks awesome. And
you wouldn't want that phone with the edge-to-edge. You want that illusion.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
you really
do. And that jet black will help it make it seem like this black monolith.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what Apple... I think it would be compromising their own artistic sort of belief that,
yeah,
like, we don't want to ruin this illusion, so there's no way in hell we're going to allow you to order this on a white
phone. I mean, case in point, there's no white glass Apple Watch, is there? Even the white ceramic Apple Watch has black glass on the front because it's an OLED panel and because the graphics need to sort of just melt into the front. Same thing with the 8. They will not have a white glass version. Pretty confident about it anyway. I mean, I guess they could, because... Well, actually,
the way
hold
to
on.
Do it, though, is to keep that front face... This is the mistake they keep making. Keep the faceplate black. Make the sides and the back a different color.
Well, that's possible. I was actually just going to say, case in point, the Galaxy S8. Normally, Samsung does a black model and a white model, but not with the S8 because it's an edge-to-edge OLED display. They want that display to feel like it's a part of the front of the phone. So they deliberately avoided a white front model. There are different colors for the back, but there's no white glass front do for the S8.
With liquid metal, do we know if we can make that different colors?
Oh, yeah. You can make it any color you want. Like, you can literally just kind of put the dye into the mix and you can give it whatever finish you want. So you can make it look like glass. You can make it look like metal. Like, you can polish it. Whatever you want, really. Like, it's absurdly versatile. I mean, we've talked about it, but this material really is just insane. But because it costs a lot, it doesn't surprise me that they're starting with just the backplate, because it kind of gives them what they need and it allows them to scale the material. Like, this was always going to be baby steps. Making the whole phone out of it, it would have been like $1,500 to buy an iPhone 8 if it was completely liquid metal, which would be absurd. So they're starting with just the backplate. So then they can build out their machinery, they can figure out how to make it more efficiently, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Work on new processes to make it even better. And then when next year rolls around or 2019 rolls around, we can actually have an iPhone that's entirely made of liquid metal, because at that point, they'll have been making it in the factories for long enough and they'll have improved the process enough that they can churn out liquid metal chassis at a way lower cost than current numbers.
So you think they would move to that material because of the cost savings?
Well, currently they wouldn't save any money, but if they bring it up to scale, if they create more efficient ways of manufacturing it, the cost goes down. And then once it reaches a point where it's exactly as affordable as aluminum, there you go. Liquid metal iPhone. Because, I mean, it's just better. If you made an iPhone entirely out of liquid metal, I mean...
Yeah, but is it actually better than the current aluminum that's in the iPhone? Is it stronger or
it's
bottom
par? Way,
really?
Way stronger.
See, it's hard to imagine, because the 7000 series aluminum that is on the Apple Watch and the 6S and the 7 is already very stiff. It's very strong.
It is, but it's still dense. Liquid metal is incredibly hard.
I mean, for the display, so you're saying the display eventually is even going to be made out of liquid metal?
Yes. That's actually
because
possible.
That's Apple, the biggest weakness of the iPhone.
So Apple actually has a patent for transparent liquid metal, and that's achieved by using tiny amounts of sapphire as a catalyst to shift the atomic structure of the metal to be transparent. So, like, the structure of the metal mostly resembles glass, mostly resembles a crystalline format, but it's opaque. So their patent is basically, we introduce a transparent crystal to the matrix of metal, and it kind of just catalyzes a process where the structure of the metal shifts in such a way that it becomes transparent. Now,
thank you, Dr. Norton, for that technical, wonderful explanation.
I'm probably half explaining it. I don't know.
We inject the sapphire and it changes the amorphous structure of the iPhone display. Mm-hmm. A little graven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's probably way further down the road. Plus, it needs sapphire, so it's not going to be cheap. Although they only need, like, a little bit of sapphire to catalyze the process. They don't need to like jam half of engagement ring in there or anything. So I don't know, probably the chassis first. So by 2020, we'll probably have an all liquid metal chassis iPhone. And then further down the pipe, assuming that they're able to make transparent liquid metal properly at scale, 2021, 2022, all liquid metal, all the time. Of course, that's assuming we don't move to like crazy flexible OLED phones that are like, you fold it up and put it in your pocket or something. Like, if we go there, then...
But that sounds like a novelty to me. That just seems kind of silly. Like, yeah. Why would I want something flexible? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I think that technology would be better served for computer monitors or for, like, desktop installations. Like, imagine if you had a desk that was entirely a touchscreen. That'd be a useful application for flexible displays. Because you could literally just, like, cover an entire desk and then it just kind of rolls up to form a wall that is also a screen. You could do crazy shit like that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, the ability to just, if you've got this flexible display that you can just slap on any surface and instantly turn it into a computer, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
That's better than a phone, but... Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say where things are going to go. I mean, we could go that route. We could go optical circuitry, making a phone that's basically a piece of glass at some point. Like, there's multiple avenues we could go down. But for now, in the short term, I think it's pretty clear that Apple is definitely moving towards finally using this material. Obviously, starting a little bit small, but ramping it up as they are able to manufacture it more cheaply. The other thing, I am fairly confident that the iPhone 8 will have a 120 hertz ProMotion display. The iPad Pro has it. The new iPad Pro has it. It is stunning. It makes every previous iOS device look slow.
You realize we're all going to lose our minds this September because not only were we getting edge-to-edge display, not only were we getting this seamless OLED screen, we're getting 120 hertz refresh in an iPhone 2. It's going to be mind-bending.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
Imagine what ARKit is going to look like on a 120 hertz display. With the upgraded AR sensors that the iPhone 8 is supposed to have, the iPhone 8 will essentially be a magic window into a world of AR content.
It's going to look a lot more realistic because of the smoothness of it, of that motion.
Yeah, like you'll look at AR content through the iPhone 8 screen, and they might even do an ad. Like, I could see them doing an ad where it's like, you're looking out the window and there's like 3D content roaming around, like maybe dinosaurs, like Jurassic Park or something. And then the camera just pans back and it's the iPhone 8 display. Mm. And then it pans back further and there's like, you see the parts of the window that aren't the iPhone. So then you can see, like, it's AR.
I guess, I mean, and it's hard to demonstrate this in the video. You can't really grasp it.
I'm trying to describe it,
I think they would have to do something like that, something in a creative way to sort of communicate the idea to consumers of what this is like.
Yeah, like, essentially the look would be, it's almost as if the iPhone isn't there. Like, it's completely transparent. So, like, everything moving around outside, it's exactly as fast in reality as it is on the screen. And I came up with a dumb marketing term that they could use for this.
Okay.
Like, what is it? That experience, reality display.
That I like that actually.
Yeah.
That works for me.
It's
And of course we all know that we're holding phones, but I think you're right. I think that's kind of where they want to go, that maybe that line starts to blur and eventually you get to the point where it's like you're saying, the iPhone is the display. This is just a window.
Yeah.
It's not a computer. It's not a phone. It is literally just this window into this whole other world.
Yeah.
And eventually, maybe you kind of forget that it is a phone. You know, I don't know.
Possibly. Of course, then we move on to the glasses a year or two down the line. But this is where it starts.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment. That makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.